Welcome to Nowhere to Run with Christopher White.
I want to lift my hands and say thank you for a brighter day. Thank you for reaching out and saving me. I want to have eyes to see everything you took from me. Thank you for the blood that was shed for me. Say thank you for a brighter day. Thank you for reaching down and saving me. I want to have eyes to see everything you told me. Thank you for the blood that was shed for me. And I praise your name with a voice you gave. And I thank you for all you've done.
Hey everyone, welcome to Nowhere to Run. Thanks for tuning in. You can go to the website, which is nowheretorunradio.com. Let's see, I had a really cool day today. I hung out with Dr. Future, who is a new host on the Revelations Radio Network. He's a great guy. I've listened to him for a lot of years now. Like, off and on, his radio show has been a staple. It's always pops up, you know, when I'm doing research about certain topics or research on certain individuals, because he's basically interviewed everybody that there is in this subculture of a subculture. I mean, he's interviewed everybody that I've interviewed. He's interviewed, and he's interviewed a lot of people I haven't interviewed too, like some notable ones lately, G. Edgar Griffin and Chuck Missler, Michael Heiser, those kinds of things. So it's really a cool show. It's Future Quake is the name of the show. It's on Revelations Radio Network, but I'm telling you, me and this guy are just as like-minded as we can be. Also, visited his church, and it's also as like-minded as we could be. We were sitting there talking to the pastor, and, you know, the pastor not blinking an eye as we were talking about some pretty strange things. So, excuse me. So I'm excited about it. And lo and behold, you know, all these like-minded people are not just in the same state, but in the same town that I'm in. So, very cool thing. So check out his show, Future Quake, on the Revelations Radio Network. Okay, so this show is something I've kind of felt like I've needed to do for a while, but to tell you the truth, I'm not prepared for it. I have some very shady notes here, and, you know, I'm just going to let it go, just let it fly. But just know I'm not very prepared, and I don't really know exactly how to present it all. But it's just some general ideas that I wanted to put out there. And I also want to preface it by saying that I am in no position to give any advice about the things that I'm about to give advice on. I am not married. I don't know what that entails. I have a pretty good guess and things like that. It's not just going to be about marriage and things like that, but it's going to focus a lot on that. And so I am the worst person experientially to give any advice in this regard. So take that for what it's worth. But I do feel like some of these things are important to talk about, and this is going to try to be just for guys' show. I mean, if you're a lady and you're listening, then, you know, it's not going to kill you. But I think that the guys is really who I'm talking to here. Okay, well, where to start? I guess the thing to recognize is that if all of us have, you know, whether they be girlfriends or wives or whatever, fiancés, it's important, I think, to recognize that they are really, really good gifts. In Genesis 2, verse 18, it says, Yahweh God said, "It is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper suitable for him." And later on it says, "Therefore a man will leave his father and mother and will join with his wife, and they will be one flesh." So this is a very natural, very good thing. But I really like, "I will make a helper suitable for him." And I think that most of us would agree that that's what our wives are. They are suitable for us. They are perfect, little perfect things. And I know that a lot of us, even, you know, in this subculture, in this research of all this stuff, we can get kind of caught up in a lot of this stuff. And, you know, some of them are very interested in it, but most of them, you know, they're just not wired for it. I mean, they care and they understand, but they just aren't wired for it. They still need all the regular things that wives need, and that is, and girlfriends need, which is a lot of love and attention. And I think sometimes it takes us a little bit of effort to do that and to remember that and to really. This is the most important verse of this whole thing, and really, if you never understand anything else, it's Ephesians 5, 25 through 27. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that he might present to himself the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or such thing, but that he should be holy and blameless. That word, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church. Okay, now, that is a very, very high requirement. It's kind of like, I think of it like the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount is some pretty tough stuff to live up to. I mean, let's be honest, it's impossible to live up to it. I think Christ makes that clear as he says at the end of it, be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. So there you go, guys. That's the requirement. Be perfect. So let's go do it. But of course, I am so glad to have that as the bar, the example being set so high, which striving for it essentially makes me closer to it. And the bar here is love your wives as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. That is a very challenging thing to do. I mean, we can love our wives, but as Christ loved the church, I mean, how did Christ love the church? I don't know, but I can only imagine, and it's a lot in my imagination. So that is a really important thing to remember. And there's lots of ways, you know, to facilitate that, I guess. I mean, one of the things that I think is important that I wanted to talk about, and we'll get into that, but is kind of taking away a lot of the junk that might be inhibiting that love. And there's actually some pretty practical ways to do that, and I'm going to go through some of those things that have really helped me, and I feel like that I learned something significant in that, and I'll be talking about that in a minute. But first, I want to go through a few more of these verses because I think they are significant. Let's see here. Let me just read this part. This is in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7. Your husbands, in the same way, live with your wives according to knowledge, giving honor to the women as to the weaker vessel, as being also joint heirs of grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. Now, that's a really interesting line. Now, first of all, okay, it's talking about, you know, that your husbands in the same way live with your wives according to knowledge, giving honor to the women, the weaker vessel, and being also joint heirs with grace of life. So that, hey, we're joint heirs in this business. Give honor to the women and apparently it makes a point because of the weaker vessel. But the interesting issue here is that your prayers may not be hindered. Now, we could kind of move past that and not really think of what the implications are there. But I want to read a little bit about that, prayers being hindered, from a website here. Let me find this website here. This is from Desiring God. It's a study done in 1994 about that your prayers may not be hindered. It says in 1 Peter 3, verse 7, Your husbands likewise live with your wives in an understanding way, as with a weaker vessel, since she is woman, and grant her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. In Peter's first letter that we have been focusing on since last September, Peter mentions prayer three times. What is remarkable about these three instances is that there is something common to each of them. Let me read them to you and see if you can detect from a common thread running through each. The first mention, Peter has a word for husbands about prayer and their relationship with their wives. Your husbands likewise live with your wives in an understanding way, as we just mentioned, so that your prayers may not be hindered. The second in the very next paragraph, he speaks to all believers in verse 8 about being brotherly and kind-hearted and humble, and in not returning evil for evil, but instead giving a blessing. Then, to support these admonitions, he quotes Psalm 34, and he says, Let them who means to love life and see good days refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking guile, and let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it, for the eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and his ears attend to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. The third mention, in 1 Peter 4, verse 7, he says, The end of all things is at hand. Therefore, be of sound judgment and sober spirit for the purpose of prayer. What is the common thread? Now, what is the unusual common thread running through those three references to prayer? What struck me is that they all three teach us not that prayer helps us live right, but that living right helps us pray. Now, it's true that praying is one of the ways God has appointed to help us live the way that we should. He quotes Colossians 1, verses 9 and 10. But Peter's point in every one of these texts is that it's true the other way around. God has appointed a way for us to live which will help us pray. There are ways that hinder prayers, and there is a way to live that helps prayer. Right living helps our praying. Let's look at these similarities again, and ask this time, what is Peter telling us about how living helps praying? The first one in 1 Peter 3:7 tells us husbands that there is a way to live with our wives that can clog our prayers, and a way to live with our wives that will help our prayers. Ye husbands, likewise, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with a weaker vessel, since she is a woman, and grant her honor as a fellow heir of the grace, so that your prayers may not be hindered. If you want your prayers to be helped and not hindered, you have to live with your wife in a certain way. There has to be an effort to understanding her as to know her needs. There has to be a special solicitedness of her weaknesses, and what she especially needs from you. There has to be a recognition that she is a fellow heir of the grace of life, and an accompanying bestowal of honor rather than a belittling or demeaning. When we husbands live like this, with understanding, tender care, and honor, our prayers will not be hindered. If we do not live like this, our prayers will be hindered. Here's the way one good commentary put it. So concerned is God that Christian husbands live in an understanding and loving way with their wives that he interrupts his relationship with them when they are not doing so. No Christian husband should presume to think that any spiritual good will be accomplished by his life without an effective ministry of prayer, and no husband may expect an effective life unless he lives with his wife in an understanding way, bestowing honor on her. To take the time to develop and maintain a good marriage is God's will. It is serving God. It is a spiritual activity pleasing in his sight. That is from Wayne Grudem. There is a way to live with our wives that clogs our prayers and ruins our spiritual impact. There is a way to live with our wives that frees our prayers and helps empower our spiritual impact. How all believers live. Second, Peter goes on in verses 8 and 9 to call all of us, not just husbands, to be sympathetic and brotherly and kind-hearted and humble, and not to return evil for evil, but bless those who are unkind to us. Then he gives a reason why we should live like this. It's a quote from Psalms 34, and in verse 12, the reason comes to a climax with the same kind of argument in verse 3 and 7, namely, prayers are hindered if you don't live this way. God has a special openness to the prayers of those who pursue peace and whose lips are pure and who don't use guile, deceit, is what guile means. Verse 12, for the eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous and his ears attend to their prayer, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. God listens to the prayers of those who live like this, keep their tongue from evil, refrain from guile, seek peace, do righteousness. So here again, Peter is telling us how to keep our prayers from being hindered. It is the same thing Jesus was teaching in the Lord's Prayer when he told us to pray, forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us, in Matthew 6:12. Not forgiving those who repent will clog our prayers. That's Peter's point, too. There is a way to live that hinders our prayers and a way to live which helps our prayers. Special endeavors we can make. Third, chapter 4, verse 7, he says that there are special endeavors we can make so that our prayers will be helped and not hindered. The end of all things is at hand. Therefore be of sound judgment and sober spirit for the sake of her prayers. Two things. First, to be of sound judgment for the sake of your prayers. Second, be sober for the sake of your prayers. In other words, there is a way to think and a way to live that will hinder your prayers, and there is a way to think and a way to live that will help your prayers. The truth of these texts. So there is a doctrine, a biblical truth, that we can now state with great confidence from these texts. Christians must endeavor to live a way that does not hinder their prayers. It has three parts. It implies that prayers can be hindered, our prayer life can be clogged, blocked. What blocks our prayers often are lives, the way we live, the way we relate to our wives or husbands or kids or parents or colleagues or neighbors. Opening the way of prayer to God involves a conscious endeavor. In each of these texts, Peter is telling us to resolve to do something so that our prayers will not be hindered. In other words, a free, open, real, satisfying life of prayer is not automatic. It doesn't just happen to you while you're passive. If it did, these three texts would be pointless. Okay, and I think this ties into what I want to say. When I started really being convicted of sin, it was kind of a... There was certain reasons that made me want to start, as I called at the time, being a sin assassin, targeting specific sins that I knew were in my life and just focusing on them and seeing if I could get rid of them. One of the things that I did was pray for conviction of these sins, because ultimately I think that that's the best way to get rid of sin, is to pray that you will be convicted of them, because ultimately that leads to the abolishment of them. But it's not to say that it doesn't require a good deal of willpower on your part as well. So, so here we find, and I based it at the time off the verse, "The prayer of a righteous man availeth much." I was thinking, well, okay, I kind of viewed the ability to tackle certain sins as the ability to have a more effective prayer life. So I was thinking, if I could stop doing this, I could have a more availing prayers. That was my rather crude thought, and I don't know if it was all that theologically sound or whatever, but that's just what prompted me to begin to pray for the conviction of sins and things like that. And that's when I really did start really taking care of a lot of sins that had been around for far too long. At that point, though, I had already taken care of probably what I perceived as the main sin in my life, and I don't even know if I would have called it a sin. I don't even know if I still would. It was alcoholism. And that was, to me at the time, if you ever have like something that is the most obvious thing, if you are something that is an extremely obvious problem in your life, then it's hard to really kind of deal with anything else except for that problem. Like, at, you know, people involved in a particular type of situation like that, whether it be alcoholism or some other grand thing like that, it tends to be the only thing that that person knows or can really conceive of when, in regards to, you know, not being right with God. It's like all focused on that issue. Well, you know, I know that I'm, not on the right path or whatever, and you're basically just thinking of that one thing. And that's okay, I guess, because in my experience, when that was out of the way, in a lot of ways, it kind of allowed me to see clearly all the other issues that I needed to take care of. And so those issues, if you have that particular issue or something similar, drug problem or something like that, and I used to have, you know, all of those things, then I would say, the first thing you need to do is to tackle it. And I did a short video on that, and I called it How I Quit Smoking and Drinking. And it's available on the new YouTube site. You kind of got to do some fishing around for it, but it's out there. It's Nowhere to Run 1984, KNOW, Nowhere to Run 1984. And I think that explains how I quit smoking and drinking. Although I didn't mention in that video that one of the catalysts for me quitting drinking was my girlfriend, who has been with me through a lot of stuff. But she was the one who essentially gave me an ultimatum that really put me in motion of quitting drinking. It's not, and let me tell you, I definitely wanted to quit drinking. I just needed that push. I used to pray all the time to quit drinking. I'd tried to quit drinking on my own, and so it was something I definitely needed to do. So I had the desire. She just kind of put me in the right direction. So anyway, once that those big things are gone, you can kind of see clearly. And as I started to progress at that point, and as I said, it was kind of a slow process of me being convicted of sins to them slowly dropping off and recognizing certain things existed and that they, and then being convicted of them was a big process of that too. So I guess let's get down to the issue here, or part of the issue. Those things like, internet pornography is a big one that a lot of guys, are dealing with. A lot of them don't see anything too terribly wrong with it. And we'll just talk a little bit about it real quick. I think that it doesn't, even if you're not into, like, you know, actual pornography per se, there's lots of stuff that qualifies as pornography, as far as what I feel that it, does to you. And, nowadays I view, to me, internet pornography is, you know, like MySpace for the most part. I mean, that's internet pornography. And I know that's like, oh my gosh, you're setting the bar way too high for me, man. Well, let me talk to you a little bit about that, because I think that there, this is where the revelation that I have, the only important contribution I have to this is with what I discovered about, that issue and where it's led me and what I think can save a lot of marriages out there. And girlfriend, boyfriend relationships, whatever. First of all, internet pornography, it has to go. I mean, it's not compatible with a prayerful Christian relationship. I mean, to a certain degree, it can be, but it eventually one will have to win out. And I would pray for conviction of those kinds of things too. And it's like quitting drinking or smoking. Very difficult to stay away from a certain amount of time, and then it kind of goes away. And then it's just up to you to make sure you don't go back. And that becomes easier over time, but it really, it's like resist the devil and he will flee from you. That's true of every addiction, no matter how impossible you think that it is. It's not impossible. And it just takes initial flesh decisions to stop and to stay stopped for some amount of time, and then the spiritual aspect of that will go away. Your desire, because if you're a Christian, you're free from the bonds of sin and death. It does not have power over you anymore, but it can trick you into thinking that it does. So it just needs your resistance to it, and that's when it will flee from you. So the first and initial thing is you gotta stop. Now, if you need a biblical reason to stop, I would say that it comes from the Sermon on the Mount, where he says, if you even so much as look at another woman, then you have committed adultery with her in your eyes. So, now I'm about to say some stuff here that's going to seem very Puritan-like, but I think that God had a very good reason for saying some of the stuff that he did, and I want to kind of just explore that with you. Now, I think that my personal view of whether somebody is married or not, because I don't really have, I don't really think that the current state of married is true. Challenge me on this. There's nowhere in the Bible where fornication is described as sex before marriage. Fornication is just all sexual immorality. It describes it in a lot of different things. Marriage biblically, yes, they did have weddings and things like that, but marriage biblically was intercourse. That was it. I mean, if you had intercourse with somebody, you were married to them. So, technically, and I'm going to say this for your conviction, technically, if you are looking at somebody in lust that has ever had sex before, you are committing adultery with that woman. So, that should set the bar pretty high. Now, I know this is for some of you to like, hey, okay, you're telling me to get off internet pornography. Now you're telling me I can't even look at women on the street or whatever. Look, I am the king of looking at people on the street, or used to be. And, I mean, I was in a band. I mean, I was always at these bars. And, you know, we had a pretty big following of, you know, women and stuff like that. So I remember talking with one of the guitar players, and we would always joke about this, that it was kind of like almost painful to look at all these beautiful women. It was like there was some kind of emptiness there. It was like a, I don't know, the more you tried to take in all the different, you know, the beautiful women and the tight clothes, and the more you tried to drink in of all of it, the less fulfilling and the more weird it got. It was like a, it's like C.S. Lewis has gone to great lengths to describe, I think, what sin's pattern like that. It becomes less enjoyable as you take more in, and it becomes more addictive as you take more in. And it's just this interesting pattern. So, now, I guess what I'm asking and what I'm saying that I did, and I didn't do this overnight, was I eventually, after getting rid of the internet porn, just deciding not to do that, and that, like I said, becomes extremely easy if you could just provide the initial resistance to it. It's not something that will continue to be there. But then you'll find that there's a lot of benefits in doing that. Immediately you'll start to recognize them. But here is, again, now this was me after, this was part of my sin assassin mode that I was in. I was like, okay, that's got to go. And so, and I was, you know, again, I was thinking the prayer of the righteous man availeth much. I was thinking, hey, if I do this, this is going to make my prayer life more powerful. So I had, in my mind, there was, an incentive. Now, I guess I'm not sure about this next part, if this was wrapped up in that too, but for whatever reason, I was convicted too about the, you know, the looking at, of women and the lusting after women in general. And so I was thinking, you know, and this wasn't a dogmatic thing. This wasn't like, oh, you know, again, you know, God's going to be mad at me or anything like that. I just felt like, you know, trying it, I guess, because I did recognize that that emptiness, that kind of empty hole that would be created as just kind of like filling into my heart's desire of women, you know, beautiful women as I'd walk through a store or whatever, you know, just looking as much as I wanted to. It was almost like an overindulgence. So I decided, and it started off with, well, you know, they just, you know, just won't to anybody that's obviously married or, you know, that has kids or whatever, you know, I'll just like refrain from looking at them. And instead of looking at them, I would, you know, just not look, you know, I'd see them once, but you don't got to look again, you know, see them once just to know that they're there. But, you know, I'd find sometimes I'd pray for them or sometimes I just would just look away and just not, you know, not look back. And that still, you know, was a difficult thing to do. There's another component to this, but this was a beginning of something significant happening. Starting to realize what kind of trouble we were all in that we are very over, we're desensitized to it a lot, especially on television. I watch television now, and, you know, I rarely do, but when I do see it, I consider almost every, you know, every time they put an image on there, it's something that I normally wouldn't look at, you know, now on a day-to-day basis. Now, you're thinking, Chris, okay, that's just impossible. What are you crazy? And I'd say to this, all that is what I find to be the, transferred to your wife. And it's done in a very natural way. And it seems like the secret of a marriage is somehow involved in that process. A lot of people say, hey, you know, I'm married, but I can still look. Well, you know, no, you can't. I mean, really. But it's not because there's a big bad punishment awaiting you if you do. Actually, there kind of is. I feel like it's kind of inherent in that process. You kind of get given over to it a little bit. But, and it does obviously hurt your prayers, as we've been, you know, looking at here, but that's not necessarily true. It seems to be more related to how you treat your wife, but in any case, I'm here to tell you that there is a tremendous benefit for your significant other and the way that you feel about them. There is, it's so amazing to get your head clear of all that garbage. I mean, it's such a night and day difference. Your imagination starts to come back. That's the first thing that you'll start to notice. Like, okay, you know, you have an imagination. And here's an issue that, you know, this is why this show is just for guys, I guess. If there's going to be, at any time, fantasies about women, for any reason, at any stage of anything, have it always be about your wife, whether she's there or not. I mean, always, always. and make that a personal rule. And some of you, you know, don't see any problem with that. Some of you are thinking, wait a minute, you know. And I know a girl would be like, what are you talking about? But I'm just saying that make that a rule. And that almost by itself will change your life. And it's not giving up anything. I don't mean to make women think that a lot of guys don't do that. Maybe they do or don't. I don't know. But I'll say that that when I first decided to do that in this idea, I thought it was kind of radical. I thought that was a radical idea, and whether I'm alone in that, I don't know. But and I even kind of thought, well, it's kind of a relinquishing of some sort of right or something that I had. But what I found was that was a lie. Like every single thing else that is opposed to the Word of God, it's a lie. And it was the most fulfilling thing probably of all of those things, is to make that a specific rule that eventually no longer needs to be a rule. Eventually you can take the fence or whatever away, the training wheels, let's say. Because it doesn't, you don't need to anymore. Eventually, it becomes the total fulfillment of all things. Your wife or your significant other or whatever becomes the total fulfillment of all those things without any other thing. And that is a really special and natural thing. And it all has to do with something that we men can do. Now, there's other things that, you know, can be done or whatever, but this is kind of like part of our part of the bargain. To if you're really going to have a really working relationship, they've got to clean up the mess. And there's a lot of mess that we can clean up, and there's a lot that can be done. I think it was Nancy Missler that wrote the book Why Should I Be the First to Change. I'm not saying that everybody's perfect or either side's right or whatever, but there is something to being the first to change. And if you love her like Christ loved the church, then, you know, then the rest is downhill from there. Anyway, so I think that's very, very important. I also think that my personal reason for doing it was, you know, let's just take out anything that was deemed, you know, sinning at the time, and in so doing, just to have a better prayer life. But in the process of doing that, and I thought I was being like overboard at the time, and thinking, well, you know, I'll just do that too. It's like, I'm just not even going to lust after women anymore. You know, I mean, that was kind of my mindset. I'm just going to, when I see somebody dressed scantily or, you know, just anybody hot ever, you know, I'm just going to avert my eyes. And I'm going to tell you, that was kind of hard to do right at first, but it was just like everything else. Now I feel like, I'm like becoming more human or something. Like it seems like in what the world has deemed, oh, you have to do that. I mean, I'm still a man, right? I still get to do the things that men do. No, we have it backwards. We have it backwards. Men are strong. Men are men of principles. Your grandfather or somebody else, you would be kind of let down if you saw somebody that you really respected and trusted on a spiritual or mental level, giving into, you know, some kind of just total girl watching, you know, thing. I don't know, maybe not for some of you, but I'm saying that the reverse is true, and that real men don't look. And recognize that there is a major benefit. Like so many of the so-called sins, they are there because they are preventing us from doing something that will harm us. Sins are prohibition of things that cause harm. We've already seen that that having a marriage, which things like pornography and things like that would cause you to not do the things that Peter was talking about, which would cause you not to have a good prayer life. It's all interconnected. A lot of the things are there, prohibitions of things, in order to maintain a healthy relationship with your God and your wife and everything else. I mean, the whole natural system is based around, you know, not doing certain things because they allow opportunities for the devil. I mean, that's what it is. It is, like I said, when you, open up a door back to that thing, if I went back to it right now, I would immediately feel like I had... Right now, I don't have any desire for that kind of thing at all. I don't even have, like, days where I'm like, well, maybe I will today, or I don't even have those days anymore. But if I did do that, let's say in a serious moment of weakness, I did go back. If I went back, the minute I would go back, I would be infected once again with that spiritual drive, and I would think about it and desire it and want it all right back to the very beginning. And so much of sin is like that, and that's the reason is because it has opened up a topaz, a doorway. And so, I say just avoid it altogether. And many of you have a lot of good reasons to be praying. You know, a lot of things are going on right now, a lot of reasons to. So we'll just, stay after it. Again, I guess kind of a short show, and I hope it got the point across. Thanks for listening. You can go to the website, nowheretorunradio.com, and I probably need your prayers I need your prayers because I, while the stuff with Michael Zasarian and stuff like that, I don't know what exactly is going on, but also just prayer for that video, the Michael Zasarian is Wrong video, that they could get out there to the people that need it and to thwart the plans of Satan and just to use it for God's glory and to help wake up a lot of people and to let God do something. Because I, at this point, I mean, I'm close to just like throwing my hands up in the air, but I know that that God's got a plan for it, because I definitely prayed a lot about it. And if you want to join me in praying for that movie, that movie would be able to wake a lot of people up, then I'm sure it could be great to be extra spiritually empowered by God's grace and mercy and love. And so, okay, thanks for everything, and I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.